So many people have told me over the years that when life gets hard, sitting and meditating and being mindful is even harder. I mean, things get so difficult that, you know, people say, there's no way that I can meditate now. Yet it's precisely during times of stress, discomfort, disappointment, and confusion that mindfulness can help us the most. Over the last decade or so, I've worked with a few thousand people. And at this point, I can say that I've learned to recognize the patterns in the way people avoid practice. When I ask people why they couldn't meditate, they say things like, "Oh, I wasn't relaxed enough to meditate," or "I wasn't feeling happy," or "I was too overwhelmed," or "I was too stressed out," or "I had too many thoughts in my mind, and that's why I couldn't meditate." So these statements all reveal a misconception about mindfulness, and that misconception is that we're supposed to do it only under conducive conditions when we feel like it. But the point of mindfulness is not to feel good, or to relax, or to feel calm, or to have no thoughts, or to have only positive thoughts, or to have an empty mind, or whatever. The point of mindfulness is to meet our lives exactly as they are in any moment. Let's face it, life is messy. It doesn't operate according to our plans and good intentions. Things happen. We experience pain, both physical and mental pain, as well as uncertainty, ambiguity, fear, loss, praise, and blame. Many of the moments of our lives are not conducive to peace and relaxation. That's just the way life is. Yet the invitation of mindfulness is to find our way into any situation with greater presence, focus, kindness, and wisdom. But in order to do this, we have to practice. We have to practice every day, even if only for 10 minutes. If you're in a state of despair, sit with your despair for 10 minutes and see what happens. Even if you spend the entire 10 minutes rocking and moaning and seething, your relationship to your despair will begin to change if you sit with it long enough. I'd like to illustrate this point by telling a story from my own life. Once, a number of years ago, I rented a cabin in the Santa Cruz Mountains of California, and I was renting the cabin to go on a solo retreat. And my plan was to spend 3 days in silent meditation and then return to my life in San Francisco. I arrived at the cabin in the early afternoon, unpacked my things, set up my meditation space, made myself a cup of tea, and then, around 4 o'clock, sat on my bench for my first session of practice. Within a few minutes, I began to feel a deep sadness somewhere beneath my ribs. Soon, tears began trickling down my cheeks. When my body started to shake with sobs, I knew that this was no ordinary sadness. I fell off my bench, sobbing uncontrollably, completely crushed and shattered. I couldn't believe this was happening. As the intense wave passed, I steadied myself and sat upright on my bench again. I continued to weep, though, and then another violent wave shook me and I fell off my bench again, on the floor, shattered anew. When that wave passed, I sat up again, reestablished my posture, and continued my practice. It went on like this for an hour. It was perhaps the most difficult session of meditation that I've ever had. I found that as each wave of grief subsided, I could reestablish my posture and the holding of the experience in my awareness. At the end of the hour, I got up from my bench, dried my cheeks, and assessed things. I felt good, cleaned out, whole, at peace. In that moment, I knew that my retreat was over. I spent that night in the cabin, and in the morning I packed my things and returned 2 days early. My sobbing session on the bench wasn't pretty, and it certainly didn't look like meditation. But my willingness to meet the messiness inside my own heart is what allowed me to come to a deeper clarity and understanding. Mindfulness, like life itself, takes many forms.